From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma.
I'm from Berkeley.
Concord, Cali.
Tenderloin District.
La Mission.
The Mission District.
Noe Valley.
I live in Silver Terrace.
Coming up, we'll see how a new tool might help physicians talk about death and quality of life.
So I think for all doctors, it's hard because the goal is you want to tell someone that they're going to get better.
Also, after her disturbing diagnosis, a Richmond leukemia survivor spreads the love and the pretzels.
I have cowbells and I have a voice.
And speaking of instruments, we'll meet one of the Bay Area's best piano players.
Great tunes, they're sophisticated, but they're not complicated. See, to be complicated doesn't mean that it's intellectually better.
That and more coming up on Cross Currents. As the presidential election approaches, one of the primary talking points is implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Healthcare is always a hot-button issue, and just last year, many politicians were concerned about the other end of the health spectrum, death.
Were you surprised when the so-called death panels suddenly reappeared on Christmas Eve through a decision of an unelected bureaucrat?
The death panels. You see bureaucrats running amok.
Politicians, what are you talking about, death panels? You're talking about the health
care
reform?
End-of-life care. You have these agencies.
Yeah, this is unbelievable.
The whole discussion of how people deal when they're dealing with terminal illness and having control of their lives, having a humane ending, is something doctors have not been trained to deal with, and certainly people just in general have had trouble with.
After a political firestorm, the Obama administration had to cancel plans for Medicare to reimburse doctors for advanced care planning. In other words, end-of-life discussions. It's a controversial topic for politicians to navigate, and it's not easy for patients either. Whether or not we're ready to talk about death, a team of local physicians at UCSF is resuscitating the conversation with a new tool they've developed to better predict mortality. KALW's Erica Mu reports. And a note to our listeners, we've changed the name of the patient in this story for privacy reasons.
It's a busy Monday morning at the San Francisco Veterans Association Medical Center.
Are you recording?
Okay, I am just starting. Okay.
A team of doctors gathers in the lobby.
I'm Alex Smith.
I'm Catherine Aragon.
I'm Sarah Murray.
Alex Smith and Catherine Aragon are palliative care physicians with the University of California, San Francisco, and the SFVA. Sarah Murray is their intern. They're on their way to see a patient, Bill Jones.
Who's a gentleman in his 60s who has a form of cancer that's slow growing. The major issues we're seeing him for are pain, and in the past he had confusion. That's cleared up.
As we walk to Jones's room, we pause by the elevators to discuss his case.
We actually used e-prognosis to estimate this gentleman's prognosis. About a week ago? Was that a week ago? Right. And we found... Do you remember what we found? We could do it again right now, actually.
Doctors usually rely on their experience when offering a patient their prognosis, especially patients who are suffering from multiple illnesses. But these doctors are doing things a little differently.
Let's just check. So I'm just pulling out my iPhone here and opening up e-prognosis and...
E-prognosis is a website developed by Smith and a team of researchers. They're currently testing an app of the site. The tool uses existing indices to help physicians with the complicated task of estimating life expectancy. The e-prognosis app prompts Smith with a series of questions like...
Does he have shortness of breath?
Does he have heart failure?
Does he leave more than 25% of his food uneaten?
Smith and Aragon spend about 5 minutes tapping in responses.
What is your guess without e-prognosis,
without
this tool?
E-prognosis, it's 6 months to a year.
After answering several questions, e-prognosis spits out an answer.
Okay, so I got 10 points.
69%.
What does that mean, 10 points, 69%?
69% risk of 1 year mortality.
In other words, e-prognosis has calculated, as Smith guessed, that Jones probably has between 6 months and a year to live.
E-prognosis sort of confirmed your intuition.
That's right. So it confirmed the clinical judgment.
Which isn't always the case.
Doctors
take their training and their professionalism very seriously. They really don't like being wrong. And whenever you make predictions about the future, you're almost guaranteed to be wrong sometimes.
That's Dr. Sei Li, geriatrician and assistant professor at UCSF and SFVA. He's one of the authors of E-Prognosis. When it comes to predicting death, Li says, physicians aren't just sometimes wrong. They're frequently wrong.
Doctors, when they use their clinical intuition to estimate life expectancy for a patient, have a tendency to be overly optimistic and estimate that on average a given patient will live at least two times longer than on average what the patient does end up surviving to.
And that miscalculation can lead to bad medical decisions. Physicians might approve risky tests for frail patients who likely won't live to see the benefits of those tests. And it can lead to worse quality of life at the end of life, Li says.
One of the things that we are struggling with in this country is that patients are not entering hospice until very late. And on average, that time can be as short as a week or two before death, which is really not enough time to maximally relieve symptoms and really support the family.
E-prognosis can't predict a patient's death with 100% accuracy. Nothing can. But combined with a physician's intuition, the tool can help inform end-of-life conversations with patients, if they want to have them.
It's certainly not an easy topic to think about, but in my work as a doctor, I feel like so much of the heartache and hardship that comes at the time of death are because things were not well prepared beforehand. Things that needed to be said, weren't said. Those things could have been avoided if there had been a more frank discussion about life expectancy and prognosis up front.
Back at the SFVA nursing home, Dr. Aragon is attending to patient Bill Jones while Dr. Smith and Dr. Murray look on. Jones looks grizzled and grayed, and his speech is a little garbled from the cancers in his throat and head. But overall, he's clear-minded and upbeat.
How are you doing this morning?
Not too bad. You know, I mean, there's been good days and bad days. The symptoms change a lot on this thing. They change almost every day or two. So. The other night, I thought it was going to happen. I had the feeling that if I started to go out and I had the strength to like summon a nurse, that I would want to be kept alive at least one more night.
You know, as you were bringing up the concern about dying. I wondered, has anyone ever talked to you, or have you ever kind of wondered how much time you may have?
Oh, yeah. It's, now it could be weeks, could be months. It could be tonight.
Would you like to know kind of what we think as your doctors, how much time you have? Would that be beneficial?
Yeah, it might be.
So we never have an exact number. You know, none of us have a crystal ball to say how much time you're going to have here.
Yeah.
And we can never predict something that just suddenly happens.
Yeah.
I think if things kind of continue the way they are, I could see you living for 6 months or a little bit more.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what things do you worry about in terms of dying?
Right now, practically nothing. I've got my money in order. I'm probably going to be one of the few people on the planet who can, like, leave an inheritance to his mother, if my mother's still alive. I've been, you know, talking to ministers and priests and people in the church. I don't think I'm going to hell, so if you believe in that sort of stuff, I think I'm just the pain is the thing I fear the most, I think.
Aragon and Jones talk a while longer. Afterwards, I meet with the physicians in a conference room down the hall.
How do you guys think that went?
I think
it was good.
Yeah.
I mean, he definitely is more. You get a variety of what people are willing to like talk about when they're near the end of life or how comfortable they feel. It's hard because the goal is you want to tell someone that they're going to get better.
I think what is clear is that doctors have not been well trained in this historically.
Again, Dr. Sei Lee of UCSF. Despite trends of the past, he says that some medical schools are starting to prepare young doctors to conduct end-of-life conversations, and tools like e-prognosis can help. The site's been active for 2 months and received about 500,000 page views in its first week. Meanwhile, at the SFVA, Bill Jones is planning for the last few months of his life. He isn't accepting any more chemo. He says he doesn't know what kind of a vegetable he'd be if he continued treatment. Instead, Jones is spending the rest of his days in hospice care at the SFVA Community Living Center. And that might make his last few months a little more livable. In San Francisco, I'm Erica Mu for Cross Currents.
What are your thoughts on predicting death? Share them at our Facebook page. We're KALW News. Being diagnosed with an illness connected to death can be life-shattering, or it can be a reason to reflect on life. And for many, that in itself is healing. That's what Darlene Harris did. She's a certified massage therapist at Peace of Body, Peace of Mind in the city of Richmond. The name of her business reflects a lot of what she has now come to after living many years of what she calls misery, from a disturbed childhood to a failed marriage to being diagnosed with leukemia at age 45. KALW's Hannah Baba met Darlene at Team in Training, TNT for short. It's an organization that trains marathon runners and walkers, raising money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Darlene is what they call an honoree, someone who has had a bout with a blood cancer. She goes out to where they train to inspire them and cheer them on as a live example of what the money they raise can do. At a recent training, Darlene and Hannah set up their water stop, and while they waited for runners and walkers to come by, thirsty for a drink or some encouragement, Darlene told her story.
After realizing I had leukemia and I had to stay in the hospital for 68 days, gave me time to unload things that I had suppressed in my life. And those things revealed itself to me. One was I had an abandonment issues with not having a father growing up. Molestation in my life, coming from a dear family member. Abusive marriage, beaten pretty bad, where comas and blindness came about. But through all of those, my faith in God kept me alive and well.
And for the first time, she began to put it all on paper while laying in her hospital bed. She said while she was healing her body, she needed to heal her soul.
Each day, something would come across my mind of how I survived. And I began to write what it was about all these issues that I was going through. Some of them was very painful for me to write about. One was talking about abandonment. I didn't put all my feelings and my things that I was going through as a child in there. For instance, again, about seeing other people, young kids, teenagers, and adults having dinner with their father, walking with their father, conversations with their fathers, and my emotions of how I was walking one day, probably about 9 years old, when I seen a girl walking with her dad, holding her dad's hand, and how emotional.
So you're back at that moment right now?
Yes. How I had stepped to the side by a tree and watched them pass by. And had my little fantasy of what my father would look like. And me walking with him so happy. And it took me a while to come out of that little trance But then I got it together and I went on to school. But I was kind of sad that day. Because why nobody don't want me? What kind of person I am that they could make me and not want me?
Darlene looks up to the sky, wipes her tears from behind her glasses, and looks to the right. In an instant, she's transformed from sad to excited when she sees her TNT team starting to show up.
Now we have to, every couple of minutes, we're going to have to stop, ring the bell, and offer some water and Gatorade to the runners coming in. All right. Hello, hello.
What a nice welcome, my girls.
The sweaty, panting runners have their drinks, a quick chat, and are on their way. And so we get back to Darlene's story, past the agony and on to the hopeful.
So let's talk about how you got involved with TNT then.
As I began to walk, I saw the team in training. And I just burst out crying, so emotional. And I asked them, what miles were they doing? And they told me they were doing 18. And I was like, oh my God, this is fabulous. And I wanted to participate right then and there. And when I realized that team and training was a cause and raising funds for something that I had, all I knew was I wanted to be a part of this.
As honoree Darlene Harris passes out water and encourages her team members on, her 57-year-old smile never leaves her face, and she's glowing with a positive energy that's contagious, the energy of a survivor. She's free from leukemia, free from the agony of haunting memories, and is now part of a cause that's working to heal others. And she says next time she might take on the running trail herself.
Every soul that comes, I see coming in, I root for them. Go, team. You go. Team in training. I ring my bells and let them know that I love them and I appreciate them coming and doing this event and training for people with blood disorders. It's just my joy to be out here. And eventually, I'm going to get a half a marathon in, but I'm not promising anybody 26.2.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Music is a soothing companion in illness and in tough times. It lowers stress levels, making the challenge of disease a bit easier. One of the finest musicians in the Bay Area is pianist Larry Vukovich. He's produced dozens of CDs. His latest, called Something Special, has managed to top the jazz charts for many weeks in a row. Vukovich just completed a series of Bay Area gigs with saxophonist Scott Hamilton, one of his favorite recording partners. In the first of a monthly series of profiles, reporter Reese Ehrlich presents this jazz perspective on Larry Vukovich.
Veteran Bay Area pianist Larry Vukovich is finally getting his music back on the national radio charts. His CD, Something Special, has hit the top 10 lists for numerous weeks in a row. While Vukovich is best known as a pianist, he's also a talented composer, as you can hear in one of his earliest compositions, Blue Balkan.
The
The first album that I did as a leader was Blue Balkan. And coming from the Balkans and hearing that music on records there and in person and playing some of it on accordion stays in your system and you never forget it. And I came here in 51, but it took till the late 70s for me to get an inner feeling, inner urge, so to speak, to get to the piano and put some of these things down. Interestingly enough, the title tune, Blue Balkan, was done very quickly. It just flowed, you know. And the inspiration came from the ethnic Gypsy Roma music, the Slavic and Arabic, you know, klezmer, all the same scales.
Vukovic, like many musicians, can hear a tune once and remember it. That may seem magical to us non-musicians, but he explains that most jazz tunes stick to a common form.
You have to photograph it in your ear and see it. Almost you can see a pattern on a keyboard or on paper. Oh, it goes through those changes to that key, then it comes back, and you hear it once. And most of the great tunes, man, I mean, great tunes, they are sophisticated, but they are not complicated. See, to be complicated doesn't mean that it's intellectually better. Complication sometimes then can be a mental kind of an ego game.
On the CD Something Special, Vukovic and his band don't just play the notes, they add an extra level of swing. The CD features Scott Hamilton, who usually records jazz standards.
It's the chemistry of the musicians. Scott Hamilton is so melodic, and as people said, he was taken out of his comfort zone because he never played these bebop tunes. But because he's a great musician, has a great ear, for him it was an inspirational adventure. He plays a lot of standards. Old standards, you know. He doesn't play, to my knowledge, Dexter Gordon, Sonny Clark tunes, Horace Silver, although, and it showed that he can. Scott was playing on top of a rhythm section that is looser, kind of a little bit more open to adventure. So we were all inspired hearing great guys playing their solos. You know, we just ran the tune over, played it, and I think it was, you know, pretty relaxed.
Music from this jazz perspective comes from Larry Vukovic's CDs Blue Balkan and Something Special. I'm Reese Ehrlich with a perspective on jazz.
To hear more of Reese Ehrlich's jazz perspectives, visit jazzcorner.com. Click on podcasts. Find the link at kalw.org. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. Team includes Rose Arrieta, Hannah Baba, Sarah Bernard, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Audrey Dilling, Fatima Duran, Carolina Hidalgo, Jordan Katz, Artem Konohovs, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Rena Palta, Lisa Ratner, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and David Waldorf. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thanks to you, we are listener-supported radio. Tune into Cross Currents Monday at 5. We'll hear your thoughts on the Occupy movement, get an update on the actions around education cuts in California, and hear about a San Francisco theater company that's turning the tables on perceived sexism in theater.
Feminist, post-feminist, construction, deconstruction, it doesn't matter. The bottom line is that women are not getting their works produced.
That's Monday at 5 on Cross Currents. The song you're hearing is performed by the Magic Orchestra of San Francisco. They'll be collaborating with conductor John Kennedy this Saturday at the Jewish Community Center in San Francisco. It's part of this year's Festival of New Music, presented by Other Minds. Music starts at 8 p.m. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.